Hey everyone, I'm your host Piers Kicks, and welcome back to Metaverse Musings, which is a research-focused podcast that's part of Delphi Digital. We explore the integral components behind what many believe will be the internet's successor, a virtual extension of the natural world where most of us will eventually live, work, and play. To some, it represents our next great milestone as a network species, and to others, it is something to fear. With our guests, we discuss the technology, philosophy, and culture behind this brave new world. If you're not yet subscribed to the Delphi Research Portal, then I fear for your soul. You're missing out on the most incisive analysis that the digital asset space has to offer. Seriously, check it out. Nothing said on this podcast is a solicitation to buy or sell any security or token or to make any financial decisions. This podcast features sponsors, and any ads are not an endorsement by Delphi Digital and are for informational purposes only. Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of Metaverse Musings. Today, I'm very pleased to introduce you to Breck of Zora, which up until recently is a project that I've been very intrigued about and has been shrouded in mystery. So Breck, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Pierce.
Could you start us off by giving us a sort of overview of what Zora is?
Yeah, sure. So Zora is a universal media registry protocol that's built on top of Ethereum. I think at a high level, it is an extension of the ERC 721 standard to bring about some new things in the standard that we thought were previously missing. The most important piece is the unification of media and market. So we have embedded an actual market mechanism to every single NFT that is built using Zora. We've also included some provable scarcity to allow for like a given piece of media or token's content hash to only be minted once. And we have also included this like idea of share splitting or perpetual equity, such that when you create something on Zora, you're able to specify the share of equity that you'd like to earn on all future sales that occur on the Zora protocol. So those are the three things that I think make Zora unique. And that's the quickest way probably to summarize what Zora is for now.
Mm-hmm. And so all of those factors kind of coalesce in what you guys have described as crypto media or platformless media. For those listening that may be kind of, new to this stuff, could you please explain sort of, how this is distinct from traditional forms of media and I suppose sort of just regular NFTs themselves?
Yeah, so I think the best way to think about it is like the way that content and digital media is like currently produced and created is through platforms, right? So like if I have a picture and I want to post it on Instagram, or if I'm a musician and I want to post something on Spotify, I am beholden to the platform for distribution. And what happens is a lot of the creators' rights get taken away from them. Their media is locked into their platform. The monetization of their media is locked into the platform, and it makes it very difficult for people to switch and for the creator to actually earn their fair share of the value that they're creating and the media that they're producing. And so I think NFTs, by and large, produce a way to decouple the ownership of media from the platform. And we're starting to see that. I mean, we've been seeing that for the past few years, ever since the NFT standard became a thing. But something that we noticed at Zora was that many NFT platforms, such as like Nifty Gateway, Foundation, Rarible, Super Rare, are building many of the same lock-in mechanisms as traditional digital platforms, digital media platforms. So, they take in their platform fee, or the royalties for creators are very bound within the markets of the specific NFT platform. And so the way that we describe what Zora is as platformless media is we have allowed and pushed down the ownership not only of the media but of the monetization or of the market to the protocol layer, such that now, like if you mint or create something on Zora, it's truly platformless in form factor and is not beholden to any lock-in mechanisms of a given platform, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah,
no, it's a super, super interesting concept. Really, really excited to see where it all goes. For kind of diving in a bit more, could you give us a quick summary of your personal background leading up to you joining Zora?
Yeah. So let's see. originally from Louisville, Kentucky, which is not by any stretch of the words a blossoming tech scene. But I went to college in Tennessee to study computer science and organizational psychology. And then after college, I went and joined Coinbase on the crypto team. Back in, this would be early 2018, or I guess fall 2018. Worked on the crypto engineering team, primarily doing stuff with the hot wallet architecture. So we created a generalized hot wallet architecture to be able to keep up with, you know, the likes of Binance and all the other exchanges that were launching a bunch of networks and stuff before Coinbase could. And so, the best way to say it is, like, I use Coinbase as my sort of like graduate degree in crypto, and it got me really into the nitty gritty of all the different networks. And then after about 2 years of engineering on the crypto team at Coinbase, I moved over to a product role and started to evangelize some of the more crypto forward initiatives with, you know, such as DeFi and stuff within the company. And then around October, November of 2020, I decided that it was time for me to make a switch and go, you know, put my boots on the ground and actually work on a startup somewhere, like, you know, closer to the edge of the space and really get my hands dirty with stuff. And so I decided to join Zora around the October, November of 2020.
Wicked. And it seems to me that you guys have sort of really taken a step back and looked at the bigger picture of what's going on here. Could you provide some color on what exactly motivated the build out of Zora? What was the sort of spark that kicked it off?
Yeah. So when I joined, if you remember, Zora was actually this like physical marketplace where we were attaching some interesting experiments with crypto economic bonding curves to like traditional hypebeast drops and physical goods. And when I joined Zora, I actually thought that that's what I was signing up for. And then, yeah, like literally day one, we got in a meeting and we discussed sort of what we thought the vision of the future of the company was. And this is when we started talking about NFTs. And we started talking about like the landscape and what we thought the problems were. And many of the discussions were sort of like the discussions that you see happening with like sound money in Bitcoin, like what makes a sound digital primitive as an NFT. And I think we were discussing some things like, you know, provable scarcity, like platformless in nature. And we didn't see some of those things happening, you know, in real life. And so that sort of motivated us to define a protocol that like fully encompassed all the things that we decided were of a sound piece of digital media or ownership of that media. And that's what led to, you know, what we know as, you know, right now as the Zora Media Protocol.
Super interesting. Yeah. And what do you think was different about kind of the Zora approach and mentality that allowed you guys to see this opportunity where others hadn't? I feel like based upon a lot of the stuff you guys put out, you know, there's some sort of creative thinking around it. I wonder, you know, what allowed you to spot the opportunity where others hadn't really?
I mean, this might sound cliche, but I think it's just being creator first. It's easy to see when you take an objective lens how the existing NFT marketplaces are sort of missing the boat, right? There's like fragmented liquidity, there's platform lock-in, things that sort of like sit in opposition to the promise of, you know, why we're even using NFTs. And I think because we weren't already in that space, we were able to see it for what it was and work on it from first principles and not already have the bias of like, we need to build a business on top of this thing.
Makes sense. So could you give us an idea of sort of how big the team is now and kind of how it's evolved over time? And, you know, have you guys raised capital? What's kind of what's the company looking like from that point of view?
Yeah. So I joined as one of the first members outside of the founding team that was building the physical marketplace. I believe we're 8 people in total now, maybe 9 now, but we're distributed in workforce. Like we're all different parts of the world. I think we have a contingent in Sydney, Australia, Slavar designers in Russia, and then a couple of us are sprinkled around the US. So we work fully remote across time zones. Like, we joke around on the team that, like, when you start working at Zora, you're getting your master's in time zone math, because it truly is like a hard thing to manage, but we're all getting a lot better at it. And yeah, in terms of money, we've raised a seed round back in early spring, and that's been getting the job done for now. And I can't speak too much about other fundraising. But yeah, I think that's the general makeup of the team. A bunch of engineering. So, like, we have a product engineering, a couple product engineers, a couple of like smart contract crypto engineers. And then, you know, we're looking to hire to help build up the team even more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't help but feel like the kind of sort of lightweight protocol you guys have built, paired with this really neat concept of crypto media, will be of, you know, sort of enormous importance to the ecosystem in some capacity. How do you view yourselves within the market, and kind of what are your ultimate ambitions?
Yeah, I think from the outset, one of the primary goals of building this was for it to be simple, and for it to be able to be composed with other things on top. You know, Uniswap V1 is a really, really nice, clean example of like this simple primitive that was used and was able to be built into, you know, some other applications at the protocol level. And that was very much a part of the design for Zora V1. And I think there's a ton of really, really interesting things that you can do with it now, where you have this like base layer of media ownership and provenance, and also like liquidity, right? So like, I think a lot of the interesting things that you hear people talk about with, like, you know, where we see NFTs going in the space is now sort of enabled when you have this like shared primitive where there's not fragmented liquidity that's bound to a platform, and it just like exists on chain in a smart contract.
Yeah, super interesting. I won't pretend to be any sort of Vitalik when it comes to coding ability, but what you guys have built seems to be super lean as well. I think from a sort of, you know, integration perspective and whatnot, and as you say, ability to be built on top of, like, it seems really attractive from that point of view. Could you touch upon some of the design considerations you have when building this thing out?
Sure. I think the important thing for us was, yeah, to keep it fairly simple, because gas costs are skyrocketing these days, and allow for, you know, people to build more complex things on top. And so, you know, a couple of the considerations that we had were, do we build on ERC-721 or do we build on ERC-1155? And we felt pretty strongly that 721, having one-of-one editions of media, was the right approach. Was that, you know, editions are interesting from a certain perspective, but like in terms of, I think, pureness, like having the ability to say that this is the true single, you know, provably scarce item or you know, certification of ownership of this piece of media is much more powerful than having editions. And I think it stands true to like what Zora stands for. And the fact that like media, you know, just content on the internet, like wants to be free and wants to be open, but like we want to have this like single, you know, registry of provenance or ownership for that thing. So that was one thing that we discussed pretty heavily. Another was, what do the actual mechanics of the market look like? Like, what does this auction slash mechanism look like? And I think we felt very strongly that it should be pretty unopinionated. I think a lot of auctions assume that there's like an expiration date, assume that the highest bidder always wins, and that in some ways limits the capabilities of the seller to the confines of the rules of that market. And so for Zora, if you'll notice, the market is like fully open and fully up to the asker or the owner of the media to be able to accept any bid. So the way it works is like, as soon as you mint, you can solicit bids, and any potential buyer can bid on a piece of Zora media, and there's no expiration date. So like the bids remain, the liquidity remains on the object until the bidder either removes their bid or the asker accepts it. So you get this like perpetual liquidity. It's not like a 24-hour auction where, you know, everyone has to bid and the price discovery is confined to 24 hours. It is confined to, you know, the lifetime of a piece of Zora Media. And then from the asker's perspective or the owner's perspective, they're not bound to taking the highest bid. So like we've had a lot of internal discussions about like identity and curation, and like is it more valuable for an owner of a piece to sell it, you know, to a Ethereum Anon for $10,000, or to sell it to someone who has built up a social reputation of having good taste or, you know, or curating good art, such as like let's say for example Kanye West. Would it make sense to sell it to the Ethereum Anon for $10,000 or to Kanye West for $1,000? And the next piece, the next design that we had sort of fits into why this is even a question. And that is like, we wanted to allow for the ability to assign share splitting to the different stakeholders of Zora Media. And so the reason why this is even a question is like, in Zora land, when you create something, the initial stakeholder is the creator, right? And so you can say, as a creator, I would like to signify that I want 10% of ownership of all of the future sales of this piece of media. So like, you know, if I create, let's say I create a GIF and I sell it to Pierce, if I had 10% stake in it, then like the next time that Pierce sells it, I get 10% of that sale. And then the next time that the person that you sold it to sells it, then I get another 10% of that sale. And that's what we call perpetual equity. And another piece, the other sort of way that the shares are split is through this thing called a sell-on share. So this is a thing that's actually fairly popular within soccer transfers between teams, but it's the notion that when I place a bid on something, I can actually say that I will bid for, let's say, 1,000 USDC to own it, but I will also give you as the current owner 10% of the time, you know, 10% of the sale that I make next. So in the Kanye example, you know, you've got this Ethereum Anon that is bidding 10,000 USDC, but you have Kanye who's bidding, let's say, 1,000 USDC. The idea is that when Kanye owns a piece of art and sells it, it's immediately worth a lot more in value, right? Just because of the name Kanye that's attached to it. So Kanye can place a bid of 1,000 USDC and say, I will give you a 10% sell-on share. And because the value of the piece of media stands to potentially, you know, go up 10 or 20x just because Kanye's name is attached to it now, taking on that sell-on share is actually probably a pretty good idea from an economic perspective. And so you get to see this like interesting sort of social graph be built on top of Zora, where artists are incentivized to work in a specific way, and then also curators and buyers of media are also incentivized to work in a single way. And there's like and there's interesting economic incentives that will be created for platforms and curators to like to use the protocol. And I think it's a really interesting thing that has been like a positive externality of what we've built. The other sort of like important design decision that we made was about provable scarcity and the fact that like when you mint something on Zora, you have to specify a content hash. So you're saying that this piece of media that I'm creating represents a piece of content that is located at this URI that exists on the blockchain. So like a reference to an IPFS URL or Arweave or even Google Drive, you know, just some way to actually access some content. And this is what that content hashes to. And when something is created, its hash is written into immutable storage. And so I can't go and create the exact same thing. So if you create like, you know, a certain picture and that starts to accrue value, no one else can take that same piece of content, hash it, and then add it to Zora. So you have this like provable scarcity that there's no such thing as a copy of a piece of media on Zora. And that's not the you can't make the same case for other NFT contracts and even for the ERC 721 standard as a whole. And so we felt very strongly that this is an important design to make, an important decision to make. And so that's another thing that makes Zora a bit different than other NFT marketplaces and such.
Yeah, that last point's super interesting. I didn't actually realize the true extent of that. That's super neat. Having built all of this stuff out, I can see some really interesting sort of mechanisms by which people, either people looking to own and share on the upside of these things, or creators themselves can engage with it. But in terms of you guys and how you plan to monetize around this, now that you've built this thing that you've released into the wild, what does that look like? What are your plans there?
That's a great question. So for now, you'll notice there's no monetization to Zora as it currently exists, right? So there's no fee for minting on Zora outside of your gas fees. There's no fees that Zora takes as a part of any of the interactions that you do with the protocol. As something that we discussed about, like, the interesting sort of platform or curatorial economic structures that now might exist on top of Zora, we could see Zora.co, which is the product that we're building to interface sort of like a nice, clean interaction with the Zora protocol. We could see us using and experimenting with some of these economic things. So for example, like, if you think of Zora.co or any platform as a means of distribution, you could see, like, let's say Zora decides that this artist has some pretty interesting pieces. We would, we would bid at a pretty low amount and then set a pretty high sell on share for the artist. So we say, like, we'll pay $1,000 for your piece. We'll give you 90% sell on share. So you get the reaps, you reap the benefit of whatever sale that we make by exposing people to it on Zora.co. And then, it goes up in value because, people believe that Zora.co is a good curator. And then we sell it and we take that percentage of the sale just because, so we take the 10% of the sale that we're owed just for being a curator in this market. But all of the upside is then, the rest of the upside is then given back to the creator. So there's some room to, like, experiment there. At the protocol level, you could imagine that there's an iteration of, from Zora V1 and the learnings that we have in this, like, open, permissionless, unstoppable, protocol, and move to a V2 where there's some more complex interactions, with governance or a native token that would allow for, like, some more monetization stuff, but we're not there yet. And we're really focused on just building out, a nice developer community and a really, like, strong user base of the existing platform as it is with zero monetization involved.
Mm-hmm. Makes a lot of sense. And then, I guess, kind of touching upon that developer angle or kind of otherwise, I wanted to speak a bit about the sort of integrations. So I think I've seen Mirrors already looking to integrate some of the cool Zora NFT style stuff, I think I saw. And then I was curious as to, like, how you guys are going to incentivize sort of integration and adoption of Zora amongst other platforms. Cause I assume the plan isn't to have everyone to always come to Zora's site to view this stuff, but to be able to, view it across a sort of wide range of venues across the web. So what does that look like, and what's the incentive for platforms to actually integrate Zora?
Yeah, this has actually been the most exciting piece of I think our post-launch. So we launched this thing called Zora OS, which is a suite of developer tools to allow for platforms to build on top of Zora. And it's many of the tools that we use in Zora.co to be able to interact with the protocol. The tools are, we open sourced all of our core contracts. So anyone can dive into the Solidity and see what's going on there and understand the architecture and the design and stuff like we've discussed today. We also open sourced an SDK. We actually call it a ZDK, just the Zora Development Kit, which is a TypeScript library to make it super easy and straightforward for anyone to access the contracts across all of the deployed networks, to do any sort of, like, read to the contracts or write interactions to the contracts. And it also performs a handful of utility functions to make, like, all of the interactions, like, super smooth and, like, inconvenient. And then we also, the final piece of Zora OS is a subgraph, which is just our implementation of graph protocol to allow for this like open source indexing of data without having to, you know, make network calls to the blockchain to be able to build an application and have a nice like GraphQL schema for people to build on. And this has actually proven to be like a super powerful differentiator, I think, for the Zora protocol. We're seeing a ton of people work and build open source just like tools that people are using off of Zora OS. The first was Zora.gallery, which is a community-based implementation of the Zora.co frontend to allow for people to create and to bid and to view the feed of sort of all the stuff that's happening on the protocol and through the subgraph. Another really interesting tool that we've seen built by the community in an open source way is Zora.fm, which is this radio station that has provided a frontend for all of the audio that has been minted on Zora and just like loops through and plays random songs that have been created on Zora, which is really, really cool. And then just yesterday, we saw two really interesting projects, NFT Talk, which is essentially just reading all the stuff from that's been minted on Zora mainnet and this nice like in a TikTok sort of like UI or interface. Aurora.gallery is another one, or I might be saying that wrong, Aura.gallery. This person built a 3D world where you can go and view all the different NFTs that they've liked and curated based off of the type, you know, if it's a GIF or if it's an audio or video. And I encourage you, it's really, really interesting to see what it looks like. And just a ton of other tools. So like you've seen people build like validators to say like, is this piece of media valid in the sense that do its URIs that live on the blockchain, does the content that is hosted there actually match up to the hashes that are stored in the immutable storage on the contract? There's also some tools for like, what are the interesting new things on Zora that have no bids? So like if I'm a curator, if I'm, you know, someone who wants to find something before the crowd, this is a tool to like look for things that people haven't already bid on and like be the first to the party for something that's been minted on Zora. And obviously there's also some more, maybe serious is the wrong term, but like platform specifically that are building on top of Zora. Mirror is a great example. You probably saw their experiment with crowdfunding for an essay that was going to be minted as an NFT on Zora. I think we'll see more of a relationship build where Mirror's, you know, building that functionality more into the way that all pieces of content or writing on Mirror go into and are minted as an NFT. And we're also working very closely with a company called Catalog, which is building this like digital vinyl record store on top of Zora. So they're building an experience specifically catered for musicians to be able to mint new audio tracks on top of the Zora protocol, which will be really cool. And so I think, yeah, long story short, we've been really impressed by all of the stuff that people are building using Zora OS. I think one of the primary focuses of Zora as a protocol is to cater towards this like really nice developer experience, make it as easy as possible for platforms and for developers to be able to interact with, and onboard to Web3, because I think many of the people that are becoming interested in Zora actually have not been in the Web3 or crypto world for a while. And so it's just like really doubling down and making the experience quite nice and making the difference between creating a React app or a front end for, you know, Web2 world and making it just as easy and simple in the Web3 world for Zora.
Absolutely, yeah. So I usually ask this question of NFTs, but we'll roll with their Zora-enabled extended form. If you had to distill the core value proposition of crypto media into just a few sentences, what would they be?
This is a hard one. I think I could even do it in two words, and I think it's just platformless media, right? We've talked about this a bunch today, but I think it's the ability for people to be able to create and own things and own the way that they're monetized on the internet outside of the realms of platforms. We're sort of seeing this like take place, not even just within crypto, but with like the broader world where like stick it to the man is becoming a thing, like break down the hierarchical structures with like Wall Street Bets and with like populism and politics. And I think, you know, crypto media and this, you know, this new platformless media that we've built really stands with that ethos. And yeah, I don't know. I think that's the best way to distill it is like, let's make stuff on the internet that is not, you know, within the graphs of the Instagram social graph or Spotify or, you know, all of these large internet companies that we've learned to distrust.
I like it a lot. You're going to be penalized for more than a few sentences though, but it's two words does it. Two words does it. So 2020
I tend to ramble.
So 2020 was obviously a huge year for NFTs, but it kind of seems like you guys are driving a new level of, I suppose, creator empowerment now. What would you say are some of the key trends to watch this year, both for Zora and the ecosystem more broadly?
I'm not sure. I think, so another thing that I sort of frame things on is like, I think right now when it comes to NFTs and when it comes to, yeah, we just have this new shiny thing. And whenever you get a new shiny thing, the thing that you like to do is like take things that exist in the current world and apply them to the new shiny thing. So mint things that would currently go on Spotify or Instagram as an NFT. And that's only so interesting for a while. And I think it's when you start to get and explore and experiment with like the new capabilities of the new shiny thing that things get really interesting. And I think trying to like see into the future and predict what might happen with the new shiny thing is kind of hard. It's, you know, in the same way that like in the early 90s, you know, everyone tried to put, you know, the internet was like new, right? And so the first initial reaction for people was let's take newspapers and put it on the internet. Let's take all these things that currently exist and just like put them on the web. But if you told people like Facebook or TikTok, you know, people would spend most of their time on these like social networks, you'd be like, what are you talking about? I think we'll have a similar sort of arc of how people use these things and the new interesting constructions that are able to be composed with this new shiny thing with platformless media. And so I don't know, I can make some predictions, but I'm sure many of those predictions will look wildly off from what actually happens in the next 5 to 10 years.
Sure. I mean, going off the kind of design and branding, which is shrouded in mystery, I feel like you and the team have some pretty far out ideas with this, though. So, yeah, I'm curious. So just for the fun of it, what are some of the more kind of interesting longer term use cases you guys see for this stuff, like way out on the horizon? Just any cool ideas that have kind of occurred to you as to where this could go?
Yeah. Okay. So I would say the things, like there's a lot of really interesting cross sections that are sort of independent right now. And I think where things start to get really interesting is the intersection of NFTs or crypto media, DAOs, and social tokens. So I don't know. I'm in the space right now where everything to me looks and feels like it should be a DAO. And I think that it gets super interesting when you're like, okay, we have this like platformless media protocol. We have this community of users that are a DAO, and we also have social tokens. So like, let's take the example of just like RAC. As you know, he has come out with RAC as a social token. But I think you could generalize that and tokenize RAC into a DAO to be able to, you know, sort of vote on arbitrary interactions on the blockchain, on Ethereum, and also like maintain a treasury where RAC token holders are able to redeem any of the funds that they earn in their treasury through ownership of the DAO. So like, you know, let's make a more concrete example of, you know, this DAO, this RAC DAO interacts with Zora. And so they can create stuff. They can earn their creator share. They can curate things and they can earn funds through Thelon shares and, you know, have the curatorial aspect of this like decentralized community. And then now all of a sudden the members are able to redeem the funds that have been accruing in the treasury for this DAO just by holding the token. And I think that starts to get really interesting. That's like a very basic example. But when all of these like communities across the internet, so like when Wall Street Bets evolves from a subreddit and it turns into a DAO where it can vote and do more things than like upvote things on subreddit, on Reddit, the platform, and then it can actually like execute trades and create things, like that gets super, super interesting. And I think, that's a world that we talk about a lot internally. And it's a world that I think is super experimental and out there, but like, it just starts to, it's DAOs all the way down, and it's like social tokens all the way down, and communities that are able to like have ownership and do things on the sovereign internet versus do things within the realms of a platform.
Yeah, super, super interesting conceptually, isn't it? These mass kind of internet native collectives that can wield all sorts of power, be it sort of economic or creative or whatever, however they really want it to manifest. It's super interesting.
Yeah, like maybe another point of like, so I think we're starting to see the DAOification of like all the things happen in DeFi, with like every DeFi protocol at its core, if it has governance, is a DAO, right? And so bringing in some of the like innovations of DAOs and DeFi to like this like adjacent crypto media or NFT space will be super interesting, and like and almost even like unifying the relationships between the two. Like another thing that people love to talk about is what happens if you can create, you know, crypto media, and then because it has liquidity, you know, on Zora, you can now take that out and like do collateralized lending, right? And you can like, you know, I can accrue value to a thing that I've earned, and you know, a thing that I've created, and actually take out a loan and then participate in DeFi. Or I can, you know, and you can like, you can bid on a piece of crypto media with an interest bearing token, like a, you know, like a CUSD or CDAI or YDAI or whatever. And so because it's like this primitive, there's like, you know, the realm of possibilities of what can happen when you're able to compose something, is pretty endless. And I'm really excited to see what happens.
Yeah, I really like that idea of, you know, obviously the liquidity that comes with crypto media enabling like a creation as collateral in something, or creativity as collateral, is pretty neat. I wanted to ask, to what extent do you subscribe to this idea of a metaverse? And I'm going to define it, because I often don't, and it's easy to, you know, it's kind of open to interpretation, but a persistent live digital universe that affords individuals a sense of agency, social presence, and shared spatial awareness, along with the ability to participate in an extensive virtual economy with profound societal impact.
So I definitely agree that that is the arc of where we're going. And I think it's a really interesting thing. But at the same time, I'm like a sort of a paradox. I'm like a technologist and a Luddite. So I would say like, it sort of scares me, but at the same time, it's a very exciting, I definitely subscribe to, we are on this track, if not already there, of a metaverse. And we're sort of in this like in-between state. And so getting there and having a fully worked out metaverse would be awesome. But the one thing that I want to harp on, and you know, maybe one of the reasons why we're building Zora in the way that we're building it without any sort of monetization, is that we want it to be a fair metaverse. We want there to be like, the power should be in the people that are creating things and participating in the metaverse, not in the stewards or the platforms that are making the metaverse a thing. Right.
Sure. Yeah, no, I think that's pretty integral. And that's, I guess, what we're starting to use the distinction between metaverse and sort of open metaverse with some of this stuff. But it seems exactly like, you know, what Zora's built is way up that street. So all very encouraging. What is one thing that has become clear to you since you embarked on your crypto journey that you wish you'd known before?
This is a good one. I think the thing that I have learned that I wish I had learned earlier was, like, we're all kind of making this up as we go. And like, there's not really any rules. And so I think oftentimes when you're new to a space, or, you know, just like coming out of college, you can think that there's a way that things need to work and there's a rule set that you need to abide by. But once you sort of break free of that and realize that a lot of teams are sort of figuring it out as we go, and like, there's nothing wrong with that, you free yourself from some like old world thinking and are able to like see more clearly and see things for what they are, and like, and build things from the ground up. And so that's something that I definitely wish I had like realized more quicker in my journey of crypto, you know, during college and whatnot.
I think that's a good one. That's definitely a good one. Moving into the closing questions now, what do you see as the primary path to adoption, first for NFTs and sort of crypto media?
So I think we're in an interesting space where, at least from our perspective, the creator feedback has been like truly amazing. Like I think like we're entering into the sphere of like where mainstream adoption is on the horizon. In terms of like conceptually, this is like a really interesting thing, right? Like mainstream people will start to understand and get why it's important. I think there's still a lot of challenges from the user experience and technical level of like getting people to use this at a more mainstream scale. And so, yeah, I don't know. I think we're entering the space where like mindshare is there, where people will start talking about it and understanding it, at least from the creator perspective. And now it's just like figuring out the diff between what is in their brains and what we've been able to articulate to folks and what the actual experience of using it is like. Like it's really difficult to talk about this new and interesting primitive and then be like, oh, by the way, it costs, you know, a few hundred dollars or, you know, tens of dollars to be able to interact with Ethereum because of scalability problems with the underlying network. You know, you start to lose them when you get to that point. And so I think it's going to take like, we're at an interesting place. We're starting to get the mindshare of folks. And now it's just like iterating on the experience while we're in this in-between space between L2 and ETH2 and trying to not push people away from, you know, from how clunky it feels and what it's like to interact with this new thing that we're building.
Yeah, makes sense. Then you kind of touched upon some of the cool ways that people might interact with Zora, either as a creator or as a sort of curator within it. But and feel free to sort of further elaborate or reiterate something you've already touched upon. But I wanted to ask what new business models you see being unlocked that you think, you know, are particularly well suited to what's emerging and will eventually dominate.
Yeah, I think like in the longer term, I think it turns into like, yeah, like what I mentioned earlier, this like community DAO structure of curators or creators that interact with the protocol. You know, hopefully we get to a point where with the Zora OS, it's super straightforward to bootstrap an interface or even like point and click to an interface that is your, you know, your DAO or your community's sort of like mechanism for interacting with the protocol and showcasing, you know, your curations and the things that you've created and like sort of owning that experience from the ground up. And then with that, I think, you know, it becomes a meritocracy of creation and curation, you know, like the business model is if you're good at doing that, then you will, you know, people will ascribe value to that. And because there's market and liquidity for the things that you curate and you create, it's easy for you to monetize or it's easy for the DAO to monetize. And yeah, that's where I think we're going, at least for now. And yeah, to me, it's super interesting because it takes shape and allows for, you know, these decentralized communities like Wall Street Bets to actually have a way to put, you know, their money where their mouth is, which is really interesting.
What is your favorite video game ever?
So I actually wasn't allowed to play video games growing up, and maybe this why I'm simultaneously a Luddite. Yeah, my parents were super strict about TV and super strict about video games. So, I eventually got like a Wii and like a GameCube and stuff. So maybe my favorite video game ever is Smash Bros. Just because I played it the most. But I definitely did not grow up in this like enthralled in the gaming world. Unfortunately,
that's one of the more interesting answers I've had, to be honest, especially given that you are, you know, so tech inclined and obviously, you know, study computer science and kind of engineer on that side of things. It's pretty interesting that, you know, you weren't sort of surrounded with games growing up. Beyond games, what is the most impactful digital experience you've ever had then?
This is an interesting one as well. I was thinking about this, and because we have so many digital experiences today, it's hard to nail down one single one. But from my personal experience, like I think one that really hits home for me is like, in this remote world that we're living in, it's hard to see some of the people that you love, grandparents, parents. And so I was FaceTiming my mom and dad one day during the pandemic, and they happened to have my grandfather over, and they handed him the phone on FaceTime, and he was just like, "What is this? I don't want to." I just had none of it, and it was impactful to me because I realized like the pace of like experiences and digital experiences is happening so fast, and like, it's hard for older generations, and even myself now, I feel like I'm getting left behind in many ways from like, you know, people on TikTok and the new social structures that are forming, and like, you know, this more like iPhone native or mobile native of world of like new kids growing up. Yeah. And just like, it really sobers you up a little bit or humbles you and like how fast things are moving. And so that's what I would say. It's just like that single experience with my grandfather figuring out what FaceTime was for the first time was pretty impactful.
Damn, I really really like that one too. That's super interesting. Yeah. Finally, out of all the books you've read, which one has resonated with you the most?
So the book that I read most frequently, or that I've read more than once, I would probably say is the one that resonates the most with me, and it's Siddhartha. Like taking things back to the basics, learning about, this person and their individual journey for trying to, you know, realize like self-actualization and happiness and what it means to like, you know, truly become still, is probably the most profound book that I've read. And it's so short and simple. And also the fact that it's like, it's translated from German still kind of blows my mind because the English version of it's so good. Siddhartha is like definitely the most profound book that I've ever read and read most frequently.
I love that. I'll have to check it out. I actually haven't. I always love when a book's translated to English and is written so beautifully in that translation. I really, really love it. There's
It's so good. For the first time in high school, actually. For like an English class, and the fact that I'm still reading a book from like an AP English class still like shows that it's actually a pretty great book, because who likes reading in high school?
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, Brett, yeah, I really appreciate you making the time. Super excited by what you guys are building. Very, very eager to see where it all goes, this year and in the coming years, now that it's out in the wild. For those listening that may want to follow you and Zora, where's the best place to find you and keep tabs on everything?
Yeah, so on Twitter, Zora is our Zora, at our Zora. On Twitter, I am at Brett. It's kind of annoying, actually. My full name is Breckenridge, but take out the E and make it an X. So it's BRXCKINRIDGE. That's me on Twitter. And then you can check out Zora.co is our primary interface for Zora, the product and the platform. But go to Zora.engineering to find all things Zora OS related, white paper related, you know, why we built what we built, and a lot of the motivations. And we'll have a blog out soon that helps make some of these things more clear as well. So stay tuned. Amazing. Follow Twitter, and that's where you can get all your news.
I'll link all of that in the show notes as well. Wanted to give you the opportunity for any kind of closing remarks here.
I'd love to just, you know, thank you for bringing me on the podcast. We're really excited about what we've built with the protocol and how we're